We certainly don't know what to expect. So this is ongoing work, and I was hoping to have more finished by now, but there are two papers out this year with these three authors, and then there's ongoing work with Edgar Zaguri and Michael Manhart, who's an undergraduate graduating this year, and then some new work with Kassab Betra, Ruben Essig, and Tanya Gleisberg. I will just speak about. So, we're at the high energy frontier, and I think it's fair to say that there is no sure thing as to what we should expect at the Tevatron or the LHC. From what we already know at the Tevatron, and from flavor and precision electric weak physics and the Higgs searches, the LHC may or may not burst into an obvious superfire, and we should be prepared for many different possibilities. And we have lots of examples of different theories out there, from supersymmetric standard models and in all of its many guises, to universal extra dimensions, Randall-Sundrum models, little Higgs models, Technicolor models, top-color models, so on and so forth. So we have many different possibilities out there. And it's difficult to, search through everything to make sure that, we are sensitive that we won't miss any discoveries. And so what I'm going to be focusing on are color octets. And that's because LEP doesn't produce them. LEP is an E plus E minus collider. It was an E plus E minus collider. And for instance, for LEP to produce gluinos, you have to take an electron positron, go through a Z, then create a pair of quarks, radiate off a gluon, and produce a pair of gluinos. And this is obviously a very small rate. And doing explicit searches for gluinos plus QQ bar pairs, LEP was able to set a limit of about 30 GeV on gluinos decaying to missing energy. In fact, the best way to search for new color octet particles comes from looking at a thrust, looking at essentially three jet rates at LEP, where you have where the third jet changes the event shape variable. And David Kaplan and Matt Schwartz were able to set a essentially model-independent limit on gluino-like object of greater than 50 GeV.
By going to QCD papers,
what is it? So Matt Schwartz was able to was using SCEP was able to combine up to four loop calculations that existed in the literature, combine them into a theoretically consistent manner, and then use existing results and place limits on the contribution of some new colored particle to the running of alpha S. The thrust calculations in terms of limits on new particles were actually being theoretically limited, not being experimentally limited.
Came from jet multiplicities?
Thrust distribution.
Thrust,
so you look
at the actual thrust response.
Yes. And so they were able to improve these limits and be able to go up to 50 GeV for a gluino.
The thrust distributions were just a measurement of alpha strong.
You can interpret it as that.
Yeah,
running alpha strong. So by having
the running that is constrained.
It's the running that is constrained, and they were.
There was always this thing of like the old light gluino window days. People always said you can't just look at the running of alpha because all of your the things that you observables you actually look at have all been tuned. All of your fragmentation functions, everything has been tuned to the standard QCD model, and you really need to retune on all of that. And that's essentially what these guys did. They were able to, right? That's how I understand it.
I thought that Jeannot had ruled out the very light load things less than 7 GeV.
Yeah, for the very light, but
and then above that, they were able to, redo all that, combine all that and show that the fragmentation did not make a big difference.
Right. It's basically, this was a giant factorization
theorem
result that allowed them to really legitimately, you couldn't say that they were somehow using, things that had been optimized for fitting to not having a gluino and then putting in the Gluino, everything was ab initio fit to directly to data.
Yes.
Here. So that was the big new thing.
Yes. Okay. But, well, so this is a pretty solid result now. And the question is, well, 50 GeV for a Gluino as a prototypical color octet is pretty darn light. I mean, after all, it's a 50 GeV Gluino at the Tevatron, I think, has a 50 nanobar in cross-section. It's pretty big. And so what we should do is, instead of trying to produce it off of something that isn't colored, that doesn't couple to these objects directly, we should go to Hadron machines and begin and look for them there. And of course, we have done that over the years. But at Hadron machines, these are obviously very difficult searches, and there have been a limited set of searches that have been carried out. For instance, if we just focus on the supersymmetric model and consider the Gluino, Gluinos are pair-produced, and they decay to QQ bars plus neutralinos plus additional decay products in cascade decays. And if we are in the context of M. Sugra and all of its assumptions, the Gluino has a mass greater than about 320 GeV from the latest searches. Away from M. Sugra, there are no explicit limits given, and I will show what I think the at the end of the talk what I think the what the Tevatron has sensitivity to away from M. Sugra. If we consider an R-parity violating Gluino, this search I don't believe has ever been done. Gluino looking into three jets, and I believe some people at Rutgers are beginning to just explore this right now. But this is a pretty, it could be, you could have a Gluino as light as 50 GeV and we may not have noticed it yet, which is, I think, rather shocking. If we go to singly produced objects and take like a standard model, a Randall syndrome with the bulk standard model, where you have a KK gluon, we have pretty good limits coming from this Gluino prime going to QQ bar. Gluino needs to be greater than about a TeV, maybe 1.2 TeV. For TT bar, you can take similar searches, and the Gluino has to be greater than about 1 TeV. For a Gluino that decays into two other particles, such as pi primes, if we're thinking about a Technicolor model, and they subsequently decay into two jets each, I don't believe there are any explicit limits yet on this. And so these would be four-jet searches with no missing energy, but where each of the two jets make up a resonance, and that they make a, then they can be combined together to make the resonance of the Gluino. This has not been explicitly searched for at the Tevatron or before. So this is four different decay modes, I think, are some of the most promising ways of searching for color octet particles. And I'm going to focus on two of them today, mainly on the first scenario. And that's model-independent searches for missing energy, and how to just get away from the assumptions of M. Sugra, and how this isn't necessary at the Tevatron or beyond. And I'm going to describe what I think the projected sensitivities for the Tevatron are for non-M. Sugra Gluinos. And then finally, talk a little bit about the R-parity violating Gluinos, where the Gluino goes into three jets. Okay. And please stop me at any point if there are any questions. Okay. So if we just have a normal supersymmetric spectrum or little Higgs with T parity or universal extra dimensions theory, jets and missing energy is a pretty common signature. Basically, if you have a new colored particle in the kinematically accessible range that decays into the WIMP, you get jets of missing energy as a signature. And the existing searches are based upon the MSSM, which give rise to quark pair production, where each quark then decays into the LSP and a quark, so you get two guess what's missing energy here. Or decaying, or gluino searches, where you pair produce the gluinos and you go into two jets of missing energy on each side, so you get four jets of missing energy searches, or associated production, where you get three jets of missing energy. And this is obviously a pretty general template for searching for missing jets of missing energy. And you'd hope that you'd be able to find any supersymmetric standard model, universal extremension, or Randall syndrome with T-parity model that that roughly has this type of characteristic, and most of these models have some subsector of the model that looks like this. And though the way that the searches are designed, if we just take V0 as an example, they divide their searches into the number of jets that you have and missing energy. And then they place some energy criterion on each of the jets. So for the monojet search, you have an ET of a jet that's greater than 150 GeV, and then a jet veto on the second jet of 35 GeV. For the dijet search, they just require two jets with energy greater than 35 GeV. For the three-jet search, three jets greater than 35, and for the four jets, the fourth jet can be as little as 20 GeV. Now, for these searches, these are not actually exclusive searches, so you can't just take the results from each of these different analyses and combine them together, because events from here can fall into here. Now, there are two additional important cuts that are placed. One is that they cut on the missing energy. They require missing energy greater than some amount. And for the dijet search, it's 225 GeV, 150 GeV for the three-jet search, and 100 GeV for the four-jet search. And then the final cut is that the sum of all the visible energy in the event is greater than these values here. And, well, the question is, will these discover anything in the previous class of theories? Will these discover, any of these models? And, well, this is pretty general. These are just very small jet requirements. These are a little bit less obvious. And the question is, are these being driven by background, or are these being driven by signal expectations? And in particular, if you start looking at this three-jet search, well, 400 GeV, it's a lot of energy relative to 35 GeV jets. And so it looks kind of like that's a flag. Similarly, with 235 GeV jets, but you have 300 GeV of visible energy. You have to wonder, where do those numbers come from? And so these are the types of plots that we are usually given as exclusion plots, and these are done in the context of M-Zugert. So there's some squirt mass versus gluino mass. And right here is the exclusion plot for one inverse Van der Waals, and you get 300-ish GeV for a gluino with heavy squirks. And what you notice here is that there's no M-Zugert solution, this analysis didn't consider any squirks lighter than gluinos. And CDF is actually scanned down here and has a search for squirks lighter than gluinos. But this is simply because the gluinos drag up the squirk mass, whereas by RG running from the gut scale, whereas the gluino doesn't do the same, whereas the squirk doesn't do the same for the gluino. So you can have very heavy squirks and a light gluino, but not vice versa. And so obviously this is a little model dependent, a little overly model dependent, and you can potentially relax that. But there's another very hidden assumption inside all these plots, and that is that all M-Zugert models have Gugino mass unification. And there is a one-loop result that gives that the gluino-wino-bino mass ratio is just the ratio of the fine structure constants of each gauge group. And so that means that in every M-Zugert point that is scanned, the gluino is six times the mass of the bino. And that is, a pretty strong assumption. And that's certainly not true if we think outside of supersymmetry. If we think about universal extra dimensions, the mass ratios are usually, order one. The gluino is some, 100 GeV added onto the mass of the LSB, not a multiplicative renormalization. And even inside of supersymmetry, anomaly mediation gives different ratios. Mirage mediation allows you to vary these, and non-minimal gauge mediation will also give different results. And because we don't vary the kinematics, you worry that certain kinematic ranges we may not be sensitive to. What we want is a model-independent search so that we don't need to consider each one of these models separately. But before we do that, let's just survey the types of models that we want to be sensitive to with this search and try to parameterize them. So I'm just going to focus on Gluino pair production and discuss extensions in a second. So instead of thinking about an entire model, let's just grab a little piece of the model that we're searching for, just Gluino's, let's say, and parameterize all the interactions. And then we can search over the relevant parameters in this little set of this model, so a little module inside of the model. So we can describe the minimal Gluino module as just taking the Gluino and turning on the decay into two quarks and an LSP. Now, when we do this, this is enough to actually specify how you produce the Gluino and how it decays and how it looks. And there are only three parameters that really matter for this theory: the mass of the Gluino, the mass of the LSP, and the total production cross-section. And if we normalize this relative to just a standard color octet fermion, this will be able to essentially encapture all different models that have this type of dominant decay mode.
So model parameters are actually going into the cross-section. Are you imagining that you're capturing also some case where that's been or what are you doing?
So because spin is very difficult to measure, if we're just thinking about discovery, then spin essentially, after you average over, run these through detector simulators and get down to the end, spin correlations are essentially negligible. Because you can't measure the spin, it doesn't really matter that the particle has what spin the particle has or not, especially when we're just at the discovery stage of the theory. So ultimately, all that matters is the total production cross section. So the production.
This is sort of the stand-in for other models like Coulombs.
Exactly. Well, universal extra dimensions. Yes. And so you can ask, and so the point is that this will capture many of these different models. But it does miss out, possibility of having heavy flavor decays here and cascade decays. But in particular, this will be very important. But let's just consider this for the time being, just to see what we want to be sensitive to in the searches. So if we can rewrite this and think about, trying to set a limit of this module. And so we have the mass of the LSP versus the mass of the Gluino. And right here is the degeneracy line. So this is the physical parameter space. So what MSuper does is it scans along a fixed line with a slope of 1/6 here. And that's essentially where all the MSuper searches have always searched for. Now there's an important dividing line, which is not the MSuper dividing line, but it's the where the amount of energy released in the decay, the mass of the Gluino minus the mass of the LSP, is comparable to the LSP mass. And the reason why this is the important dividing line is that above here, in the rest frame of the decaying Gluino, the LSP is non-relativistic. And therefore, when we boost back to the lab frame, in this region up here, the LSP will be traveling in the same direction as the Gluino was originally. So up here, the LSP goes just in the direction that the Gluino was produced. And that will be very important. Down here, this is basically just like normal supersymmetry searches where you have widely spaced decays. But up here, things will be different. So let's focus on the degenerate search. So if we produce these Gluinos, they will, when they're degenerate, the the LSP will just travel in the same direction as the Gluino was. And that means that if there's no additional PT in the event, what happens is that the missing energy essentially cancels between the two LSPs. And so there's essentially no missing energy in the event, even though there's a lot of missing energy coming from the Beanos. But these four jets essentially will cancel out, and you know this will not be an effective search, looking for four jets with essentially very little missing energy. And that's just because the Beano carries away energy, but not momentum. And missing energy searches are really missing momentum searches. And this becomes even worse as you begin to boost these Gluinos up. The jets become more energetic, but these jets become collimated, and so you get essentially two jets, one on each side, with the missing energy pointing in the direction of a jet. That's obviously a hopeless search to do. So you need additional PT in the event. And the way you get additional PT is by having some initial state radiation. Okay, so you radiate off a hard initial state jet. And that unbalances the momentum of the Gluinos, and so that the Beano's momentum no longer cancel, and maybe these two jets get collimated into one, and so you get one hard jet and two soft jets. And this motivates us to think about searching in the monojet signal, where we don't actually require looking at these jets here. And in fact, we can look at what the searches do for monojets, and this is the D0, ADN versus picobar in search. But they have the first jet of 150 GeV, a second jet that is a veto, has to be less than 50 GeV, and just missing energy greater than 150 GeV. CDF does a very similar search, except they place a third jet veto on this event. And that actually starts becoming a little bit dangerous, because when you get this, because these final state decay products can start getting above 20 GeV pretty easily, and you can start actually losing sensitivity due to this third jet cut. But nonetheless, these are very effective searches. But because this was mainly designed to search for large extra dimensions where you get one initial state jet and it recoiling against a graviton, that you rarely get you don't want that third jet. Whereas in this case, you may. But nonetheless, we can think about where these searches are sensitive. So down here, we can use the NJETS with missing energy search, whereas up here, we use the initial state radiation, and the final state decay products aren't particularly important. Now we can think about, just going on to other types of theories. We could do squirts rather than Gluinos. We can do squirts and Gluinos where you have pair of reduction at the same time. You can do Gluinos with cascade decay, so you have a Gluino going down into the NLSP, and then that decays down into two jets plus the LSP. And so this happens very frequently in MSUBRA. You have the Gluino, Gluino, Beano decays. In fact, this happens 80% of the time on both sides. So most MSUBRA searches have actually many more than four jets in them. You can also have things in the NMSSM where you get Gluino, Gluino, Beano, Singlino, and you start getting tons of parameters here. That means it's very hard to scan over the parameters. And in the absence of discovery, you just want to be sensitive to any of these and not necessarily, and make sure that you just don't miss any of them. And obviously scanning over 2,000 parameters is not very effective. Now, as one example of how you could do this for the single cascade, you can just have you have two additional parameters relative to the minimal module, the mass of the Gluino, let's say, and the branching ratio that the Gluino goes into Gluino. And we know the results in the case where the branching ratio goes to zero. And in the case that the Gluino goes out of the Beano mass, you get the same rate. And also you get nearly the same answer if the Gluino becomes degenerate with the Gluino. There are some small differences, but these three give essentially the same limit as just the minimal module. So you can ask the question, when does the cascade, having this additional particle, hurt the search the most, reduce the sensitivity the most, and compare that to
the search.
But ultimately, there should be a better way of doing the search rather than scanning over all these parameters. So just thinking about what these searches are, you just classify the events by the number of jets that are in the event. And then there are some visible energy and missing energy cuts on top of various other lepton vetoes, but these are the two most important cuts. So, and the important thing is that as the parameters in a module or model vary, the visible energy and missing energy change dramatically. And so these are very dangerous cuts to keep fixed relative to everything else. And so what I would propose to do is to just divide these searches into four exclusive searches, just essentially identically the same, and you have four exclusive searches that are independent of each other, and that we leave the missing energy and the visible energy free. Then instead of placing a cut for each parameter point, set a limit on the cross-section with respect to a differential cross-section with respect to the visible energy and missing energy over some bin size. And include all of the efficiencies. So you compute the standard model, including all the efficiencies, and then measure, set some limit on these differential cross-sections. And include all of the efficiencies. And this is obviously the hard thing, trying to whether you include the efficiencies or take them out. But if you include them, I think it's actually very tractable to present the results. So this is sigma times efficiency. And the efficiencies for signals are actually very easy to get right. Getting the efficiencies for backgrounds are actually complicated, but getting the efficiencies for reconstructing a Gluino into four jets is, you can basically get by running through PGS, and it will get the answer more or less correctly. It's basically jet clustering plus some geometry, and the signal will come out all right. Getting the efficiencies for background is much harder, but we don't need that. We just need to know what the limits of different cross-sections are, and then we can set limits on any model we want. And I will try to show that. So this is what we set out to do, just to see how effective this is.
Is this similar to, there was this stuff some years ago that Gordy Kane and other people did, these footprints of different MSSMs? I thought it was something very similar to this. It was also something like an HT, this ET plane.
I think it's similar.
I was wondering if it was.
I don't think it's identical.
I couldn't remember what that
was. So because, well, we wanted to see how effective this was and how close we got to the standard model, because we wanted to know where the sensitivity was. So we had to compute the background. So we did this by producing events in MadGraph, running through Pythia, then running it through PGS, and then comparing to what D0 had given in terms of the broken down backgrounds. And so ultimately, there are three important backgrounds, the WZ plus jets, TT bar, and QCD. And there are some subdominant backgrounds that are important. We were able to get the W and Z plus jets to within about, well, the Z plus jets we were able to hit dead on in terms of all the efficiencies and get all the distributions that D0 provided totally accurately. W's plus jets we were off by about a 30% K factor, and similarly for TT bar. And a lot of this is probably, we think, is the efficiencies of losing leptons in the events. So when you have a W, you get a neutrino plus a lepton, and we have a lepton veto. And in a four-jet environment, PGS doesn't get that exactly right. And 30% is sort of what we thought we were able to hit these two. And so we were able to just compute some limits on the standard model cross-section. So this is what we computed the cross-sections were for monojets, dijets, three-jets, and four-jets. Where we did not include the QCD background because because that's pretty hard to... We don't know exactly what that is in terms of whether it's instrumental backgrounds or real neutrinos in the events. And so we just set a lower limit of 100 GeV as the lowest amount of missing energy that we consider. And so the color code is just that right down here. So red is greater than 100 femtobarns per bin. 10 is, blue is 10, and green is 1 femtobarn. Okay, so this is what the cross-sections are, and then assuming 4 inverse femtobarns and that there is no excess signal, this is the limits on the cross-sections. And so you can get roughly, order a few femtobarns per bin for all of these different channels. Okay. So, do you think that, John, do you, I mean, so
I'm still digesting this, trying to think of how to look at these numbers, which are in bins of HT and missing HT, and scale to what we usually do, which is a total cross-section on a process. So I think this is like, we've typically gotten to the sub-100 femtobarn level for overall cross-sections for lots of searches,
mm-hmm.
50 femtobarns.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So if I chop that up all these ways, then do I get one or two in each of your bins or not? I don't know the answer to that.
Talking to people who did the search at CDF, it sounded like this is essentially what they do, and that we were able to hit the numbers fairly close to what they thought. And obviously the challenge is in this first bin right here, and the going down to as low of missing energy as possible.
Good. Then you have to take this and compare it with cross-section processes.
Exactly.
The next slide?
Yeah.
Sure.
So. To some degree, it's just telling you what the shapes of the distributions are.
Yes.
In theory.
Yes.
The normalized shapes, and then you could, overlay those with the data.
Exactly.
It's more than that, though, because where there's a lot of background, your limit gets worse.
So we included a 50% background uncertainty, systematic uncertainty.
You can do better than that,
probably. We were conservative. Most of the limits are coming from out here where there isn't much background and you're just statistically limited.
Okay.
So, one of the important things that we discovered is that you need to use matching to Parton-Shower matrix element matching to get even the signal right for a lot of these different regions of parameter space. That's one of the simple takeaway lessons. So to remind you, a Parton-Shower is basically how you get a jet. You have QCD bremsstrahlung that's coming off these color octet sources that are soft and done in the soft and collinear approximation. And this resums large kinematic logarithms. And it's very computationally cheap to do, and you can get an arbitrary number of final state particles. So you can actually get a big complicated jet at the end of the day, and that's done through Parton-Shower. Now the problem is that it's done with the soft and collinear approximation. And it doesn't include any quantum interference. And so to get hard jets, what you need is to actually compute the radiation that comes off, and to do this in a systematic approximation. And so you have to do a matrix element calculation that gets all the quantum interference correct. However, it's a fixed order calculation, so in principle you get large logarithms that can be problematic. It's computationally expensive, so doing a 2-to-8 process takes a long time. And that means that you can only have a finite number of final state particles. And so what you want to do is combine the best of both worlds without double counting, which would be a big mistake. And you need to do it for the signal as well. To just briefly describe how this works, so with matrix elements, you compute Guinos plus 0 jets, 1 jets, and 2 jets. And then you run the Parton-Shower. So these Guinos are coming off, they have some PT, and they radiate. And when that radiation happens is that you can get a zero jet event can end up with one jet or two jets, and the one jet can go over into the two jet. Now, the trick is that when this happens, you could potentially double count, get the jet from two different ways and double count the cross section. And the way that MLM matching works is that you just throw away any time that the PT of this jet gets greater than some Q cut, and that you only produce jets that are great with matrix elements that are greater than this minimum momentum for a jet. And that way explicitly prevents any double counting, and also fully populates the phase space, which is the hard thing to show. And then after this, you decay your Gluvinos, and then run another part on Jauer on the decay process. And so this is the way that you can, it's now a standard process, and you can do this with beyond the standard model processes in MadGraph and I believe Sherpa now. So you might wonder, well, what effect does this have on the matching, on the signal? And if we consider just a 150 GeV Gluvino that's decaying to a 40 GeV LSP, basically everything looks the same. This orange is the Gluvinos plus no jets, and the blue is the Gluvinos plus one jet. And we compare this to Pythia, just running Pythia straight out of the box, and you get basically the same distributions to quantitatively correctly. However, when you start getting down to the degenerate region, the spectrum of the hardest jet is very dependent on the radiation. And Pythia does not include final state radiation for beyond the standard model processes. It does it for the standard model, but not beyond the standard model. And you actually lose about half the signal by not including the matrix elements. And there's also some shape discrepancies. This is slightly harder than that. And it's the high energy tail that's obviously important for the signal. And so it's somewhat important to study the degenerate region to get the part on to use the matrix element matching. And so if we just, so we can take some point of a 220 GeV Gluvino and a 100 GeV Beano and compute what the signal is. And so again, over here, this is 1 inverse femtobarn, 10 femtobarns, and 100 femtobarns. And what you end up with is things that are dominated at low energy, because this is a fairly compressed spectrum.
Sorry, these are cross-sections.
After
all,
this is just the signal. So this is just computing what the signal distribution is, without any limits. With cuts. So this is passing through the jet classification, the and then requiring between 100 and 200 GeV of HT and 100 and 150 GeV.
Okay. When you showed us the limits before, those also included all the cuts.
Yes, there aren't many cuts on these searches.
That's why the numbers were so low. Okay.
Yeah, so there aren't many cuts on these. There's lepton veto cuts. However, the signal doesn't have any leptons in them.
Geometric acceptance often takes you down just by a factor of 5 to 10.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we are the geometric assumption.
This is pure signal.
This is pure signal. Now we can take the previous.
But the previous thing, actually, I wanted to ask there, and I'm just thinking you were going to. The previous thing that you showed, can you show the same thing there?
Okay.
What does zero mean? Zero just means no events in that.
Yeah, the cross section is less than a tenth of a femtobarn.
Okay, so I'd interpret those are not limits. These are just background.
Yeah, these are background, and these are the limits. And notice that the smallest limit is 0.8 femtobarns, which comes from expecting zero and getting zero with converting it back. Okay.
And the fact that the expected limits are pretty strong, right at the edge of, like if HT gets bigger than 600, what happens?
Zero.
It just immediately just drops.
I mean, the expected limits are 0.8, so,
how does that turn off as HT gets big?
So there is no background above here. So if you, now the question is if you get one event above here, and this is Poisson.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm just saying that.
So
right.
Yeah. So this is the last bin with any missing energy in it.
Okay.
No 3-jet events with above 500 JeV HT.
Above 500 JeV HT and with missing energy greater than 100. That's. So we can take the signal, take the previous limits on the cross section, and then see how many standard deviations are. And this is pretty well excluded. And so the blue is, the red is greater than 3 sigma, blue is greater than 2 sigma, and green is greater than a half a sigma. And in order to get the, to not dilute the statistical significance by averaging over bins where you don't expect to get any signal, we only include signals where we expect to get over a half a standard deviation of significance. So we don't dilute over all these HT greater than.
Sorry, the numbers in the right-hand column
are the number of events.
The actual number of events.
Events in four inverse femtobarns.
And so 8 events on a background of.
There
this
are
is
a few.
For some particular. This is a. Oh, these are the models here.
Yeah.
220 GeV.
Yeah, so it's 8 events and that signal plus background.
But it's the most significant ones are the red cells.
The red cells, yes. Oh, okay. And this is obviously the challenge right here. Now, here, you see that with a compressed spectrum, you push all the missing energy down. Down low to between 100 and 150 GeV of missing energy, and also shrink the push the HT down as well. Mm-hmm. And so even if you go up here, this is pretty well excluded. But this is obviously the challenge of because the QCD background is turning off right around 100 GeV.
The QT bar and other.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've only included those in these, and so in the background.
Okay.
This column may have to be modified, but even up here at higher missing energies between 150 and 200, there's still quite a bit of pull. But this shows the challenge of a compressed spectrum. If we consider a more widely spaced galena of 340 GeV and 100 GeV, what you get is what you find is that everything, all the cross section, is in. This is just cross sections, and the expected standard deviation and the expected significance and standard deviations. Is in the 4-jets, and it's pushed the higher HT and higher missing energies. And here you are only including the measurements right here in terms of the setting the limits. And again, this is pretty well excluded. But you can also see that this allows you to potentially get measurements out of the same. So in the same measurement that lets you discover something, you could potentially measure something on top of it. Because you get shapes of distributions at the same time.
Did you try to see how well you do in the?
We have not tried the inverse problem.
No, but just in M Sugra. So in other words, does this strategy compared to the previous optimized cuts?
It is identical.
The same bounds.
You get exactly the same bounds.
So
and that's because we are doing exactly the same thing, except that we are. You get to choose, the signal gets to choose exactly where it sets the HT and missing energy cuts to get the right So you don't do any worse. And in fact, you can potentially do a little bit better. But more or less, you do as well as the M-Sugra. So you can take this and make a sensitivity plot. And so this is the degeneracy line right here. And this is the M-Sugra line. And so if we... the dark blue curve is probably what you should pay attention to. And this is where you have sensitivity right here. This is when we were doing a cut-spaced approach. And what you find is that this is the... That again, you have this region up here where you can get using monojet searches, and then this bulk region right here you can get using the four-jet searches, and that down here you're actually cobbling together quite a few different searches. And the difference is that up here you have you're using a larger HT and larger missing energy, and this is to be compared with what you'd get just using the standard cut space search. Right, D0 did. And so you see that we get this huge additional region of sensitivity. Of course, there's no way that there are any events up here because these are totally spectacular events where you get, let's say you get four jets of 100 GeV each and some missing energy. There's no way that any of these events would be missed by the experiments. However, when you get down here into this region, right around here, then the search becomes obviously much more challenging because you're trying to battle against QCD. And by not thinking about the right modeler, you might just say, okay, I place my cut above where the QCD is turning on and just ignore everything beneath it.
How is it curved back around?
This? So this is coming from the monojet search right here. And these are the digit search,
right?
Now, these are all really the same, different limits of the same search, so you can consider this one big search.
Yeah.
And I thought that there was a theorem that that all limits, all expected limits are convex, that you expect, that you don't have these concave regions usually. And that could be because we did not optimize. We tried to keep our search as close as possible to the D0 and CDF searches, and then that could lead to non-optimized searches here.
But if you plot it in this plane, does the D0 search give you that?
Yep.
That curve back down?
That's yes. So. Okay.
Sorry, what are those? There are four different regions here, right? Dashed line, solid line, dark blue, light blue.
Yes.
What are they?
So this is, I think I may have told you, look at the next slide. So this is using signal over background of 0.3, requiring just some cut space search.
Oh, I see.
This is signal over background greater than 1, which is probably the more realistic.
The lines or the D0 search and the shaded are what you did.
Yeah, actually, I think that's actually very close to what it is, but this is multiplying the cross-section by 3 and dividing by 3. And that's actually very close to what it looks like when you do the D0 search, what the D0 cuts do, because you're actually including background up there. This is what happens when you just reduce the cross-section and increase the cross-section. Okay. But the upshot is that you can have gluons as light as 130 GeV that are not that the Tevatron isn't sensitive to. And again, doing cascading gluons, so allowing one... So this is the previous search. And along a one-step cascade, you greatly diminish your sensitivity because you're turning missing energy into visible energy. And so this actually doesn't decrease the mass by a whole lot, but greatly reduces this region up here because you start really reducing the amount of missing energy that you have.
When you say cascade, though, you're not including... cascades that involve leptons,
like
Chargino. So,
this is,
does that mean that you're making an assumption that the Chargino mass is somehow?
No, I'm including. I'm not including any leptons. I'm making the leptons out of reach, but then I am including leptons coming from W's.
Okay.
So
have a I 2 0, I 1 0, I 2 plus minus, so that you can go from here and then down there, L nu.
Right, so I assume that along the dotted line, the charging of mass is equal factor of 3.
Yes, exactly. And this small difference here is due to the fact that T-channel quarks reduce the production cross-section by a little. So it's, you see how sensitive you are to changing the cross-section. But ultimately, these aren't, this is the problem of setting limits using these exclusion plots, whereas if you just set a limit on cross-sections, so if you just set limits on, not these, but going back further, if you set limits on the cross-section, then there's no possibility of, we can make exclusion plots for our whatever model we want. If we want to have a 22-step cascade and show how bad the limits are, we can, retroactively.
Is this really all different from, suppose we wanted to just fit the HT versus missing ET spectrum two-dimensional search region? Would that recover the sort of sensitivity that you've got here?
What do you mean, fit to?
You're claiming that by chopping it up into these small regions, you're getting better sensitivity.
I'm getting as good a sensitivity as doing an optimized search for each one of these different models.
Yeah.
And the problem is that there are so many different models that you can have that that it becomes, I can,
right,
with many different sets of parameters, but they're all going to the same signal boxes. That they're all ending up somewhere on this map.
And I guess he's saying, why not just use the distribution? So if the experimentalist just gave you a list of points in this plane, why even, is that what you're asking? Why even carve it up into these? I guess the blocks
are telling you
he's not.
If you want to give a list of events too that you see, that's also fine.
Yeah.
There are some large cross sections here, so 230 femtobarns times 4 inverse femtobarns gives you thousands of events.
Then you would weight that according to your model, and you'd use this prescription
yes.
of not looking at bins where you get less than some significance.
Well, where you don't expect to get any
yeah.
significance. But I think this is, you're not gaining over anything that you can do by optimizing the search, but it prevents you from having to, rerun tons of Monte Carlo for different signal points, which I think is arguably a waste of time if you don't see anything.
Don't you have to do that to see if your
model is excluded?
Yeah.
You ultimately, if you have some different model, and then you have to run that. But the point is that the efficiencies on these are mainly geometric and.
Mm-hmm.
And due to jet clustering, which PGS does a good job.
So you're saying we should, the experimentalists up to be calculating such limits.
Limits on these cross sections on top of the M Sugra, not in place of.
But and then.
And then we can make put in our favorite NNMSSM model.
That's why I was asking this question. I mean, I would think that. I mean, if you're really not losing any sensitivity doing it this way, even for the, constrained MSSM or whatever it's called this week, then there's nothing really. Why not just do it like this?
You get. Essentially, all the searches do is they choose some minimum HT, which I think is 400 GeV and missing energy of 250, and then just look up here.
And is there just a fear that if you're slicing and dicing this too many ways that you see a fluctuation in some bin and then you're tempted to
attribute that to if we're lucky enough to have a signal show up, then we have to calculate significance properly.
Yes. In the absence of this is at least a way of saying that, we didn't see anything in missing energy or this.
I'm just saying, if you have a method, if you have a method like this that you're sure you're not throwing away your sensitivity to your one beloved model, your constrained MSSM.
You can reconstruct the previous.
Yeah, then there's no reason not to do it, right? It's not like doing Vista Sleuth where you you know, you give up on, you know, if you had a targeted search, you'd do way, 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 way better, right?
No.
That seems great.
And again, it would be different too if the efficiencies were very difficult to get right. But again, just jets of missing energy, the efficiencies are much easier, are basically geometric.
Could you go back to that divide you got?
This, which one?
Well, the one that you were showing when you were just now during all this discussion.
The numbers. Of a signal or the background? This is a signal point.
Okay, well maybe this would be helpful.
I can go back further if you want to.
Go back to the, I think maybe the previous one, is it? Yeah, that one.
This one? This is again signal for one specific signal point.
I'm sorry, say that again.
This is signal two.
Right. 220
and 100. And so this is what the cross section is and
okay,
signal
yeah,
plus.
Sorry, still back.
I think you want the background from that one.
Oops,
yeah,
that one,
that,
sorry.
That one. So I'm just trying to understand, let's see, that upper, I think you
this,
have trouble reading. And
this one right here?
What is the, so the first one is monojet.
Yeah, monojet. Dijet, three jets, four jets.
Right, yeah. So now, why are you signaling, singling out that one red one?
This is because this is actually due to sculpting from the cuts. So there is a requirement of 150 GeV jet, which is what the both CDF and D0 had.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is having 150 GeV jet and having missing energy from 100 to 150, and that turns out to be smaller than having missing energy between 150 and 200. That's just due to the sculpting of requiring one hard jet.
So that's for the background.
Yeah, that's for the background.
And those are the numbers in the jet.
This is actually the... Yeah, this is the cross section for producing monojet with missing energy between 150 and 200 GeV.
That's the number of events.
That's cross section.
And then on the
right is the expected limit in cross sections for four inverse functor lines. So there's a simple relation
of an extra component.
Yeah, yeah.
So
if you add in some additional component. For just the single box, if you had some signal that produced everything in that box, everything in that range, then you would get, and that would be the limit on the cross section that you could drive.
Okay. But why do you label that one red?
That's because that's just to see some contrast. Red is 100 greater than 100 femtobar in cross section. Blue is greater than 10, and green.
It's a visual thing.
Yeah, just because I thought that was boring, just putting up a table of numbers.
I was reading inverse femtobar, so it's how much cross section, how much luminosity you needed, but now I've got it straight with the other one. So let's move up.
Okay. So, going on to the LHC, so that's for the Tabatron. And with luck, the CDF people are going to try to incorporate some results like this from the four inverse femtobar analysis. Going forward to the LHC, we're considering this should be a fairly straightforward thing to compute. It looks like there's good sensitivity up to about 1.2 TeV with an inverse femtobar data. The challenge is actually not the high mass region, it's the low mass region again. And we got down. We saw that the Tabatron is only sensitive to gluinos that decay into jets of missing energy down to 125, up to 125 GeV in a fairly model-independent way. But this has a huge cross-section at the LHC, 100 nanobarns. So this will cause the LHC to burst into a superfire, literally. However, this if we use data-driven determinations of the QCD jets of missing energy, there's some concern that you could potentially normalize the signal away, because this is just some missing energy tail that has no features in it, just missing energy and it just falls off. And QCD looks something like this, and it peaks at, you know, low missing energy, and can contaminate your control regions in depending on exactly how you do it. And because these are such large cross sections, there's some concern that this may be rather difficult to see.
Has anybody thought about doing that? The sort of analysis that Kaplan and Schwartz did for LEP for this sort of region.
For at the Tepton LHC.
Yeah.
I don't know of good event. I thought that factorization isn't even totally true, let alone not proven.
And when you're talking about just getting the moving,
just saying from from event shapes, just jet event shapes, are they sensitive to this kind of thing? Because now you've got a big the reason it worked at LEP is you have a big dynamical range, so you are sensitive to the running contribution, right? But in principle,
well, plus you're
you
in
might
the region where it runs
run.
Rapidly. I think the problem is that once you get a Camino above 50, things are not going to run that rapidly.
And it isn't as clean as well.
It's
and not knowing,
clean.
Not knowing your energy, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's a great question.
So, I mean, this is sort of analogous to the one-time jet excess from Tevatron data, which eventually disappeared. So how did it disappear? John knows better than I do, but it's just a big one.
Wookie Tung made it go away. No, it was mainly the gluon PDF that changed. That was the biggest change.
Right, yeah, so you changed the gluon PDF, and but yet, you know, you could have asked, well, you know, was that change really warranted or not, right? I mean, could you actually have an excess?
A lot of us raised this question at the time, are we tuning away
So what was the final way in which you convinced yourself that you weren't just tuning it away?
Well,
did you ever? I don't know.
Yeah, one of the most sensitive things to the gluon distribution is gown plus jet.
Yes.
Which, by the way, you also use for gown plus jet balancing for tuning missing ET, which
mm-hmm.
I think not going to be infected by this too bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a really good probe of the gluon distribution.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to all hang together. I mean, no one has really shown that there's anything. Well, I mean, you go look at the intermediate energy running on a 630 jet, that still doesn't fit so well. But,
I can't remember D0. This was CDF only, right?
No, D0 didn't have that at the time. That was 10 years ago.
But shouldn't they have had it if it's a gluon PDF?
I mean,
if it's some underlying physics that you were getting wrong, shouldn't both experiments see the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then, of course, the era.
I was saying that was maybe more motivation for turning it away.
Oh, okay. Good.
I think one comment about my question is, I mean, of course, a big difference at LEP, you know, you can really compare different energies because, you know, the beam energy is really fixed, right? Whereas at a Hadron Collider, you're comparing different X, right, which you don't have under as good control. So I think, which is what, you know, we're talking about here, so I think that's probably the answer. Is you
still
don't have control of the energy dependence the way you do at LEP.
Yeah. But we still have a fairly large uncertainty of gluon spectrum. So.
Anyways, I'd just like to briefly talk about some new work with Ruven Essig, Salvetter, and Tanya Gleisberg, just studying R-parity violating gluinos. If you turn on this operator, it violates baryon number by one unit. But there are no great limits on this because when you integrate out the squirks, it becomes a delta B equals 2 operator, and so the limits are pretty, it doesn't cause proton decay, as long as there's no other lepton number violation. And if you make the assumption of minimal flavor violation for these couplings, that the couplings are proportional square roots of the Yukawa couplings, then you can even have an order 1 coefficient in front of this guy and not have any limits. And that also predicts that you go into primarily TV stations.
Why so much heavy flavor? Because of the...
If you make the assumption of that the Yukawa couplings are proportional to the... that the, these different flavor indices are proportional to the square roots of the Yukawa couplings, it reduces the limits and predicts heavy flavor. It's an assumption, though, that I'm not going to use in detail. But, you know, at the Tevatron, a 50 GeV, we know that we only have model-independent searches down to 50 GeV, and so that you could, you know, if the gluino is that light, then you have a huge cross-section. And then the concern is that if you have the gluino at the bottom of the spectrum, the whole spectrum goes through the gluino. So no matter what particle you produce, you end up with the gluino at the bottom of it. And you don't get many complicated cascades, because the gluino, if you produce a gluino, you go to a squirk, then a gluino, or the squirk automatically goes to the gluino. And so you end up with lots of jets in the final state and no missing energy, and that you essentially never get sleptons in the cascades if the sleptons are heavier than the gluinos. So this is a very challenging type of spectrum, and we've never looked for these types of events. And so with the...
that's not quite true. I think we studied that kind of thing back at some workshop.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Was it the Tevatron workshop?
It was the Tevatron LHC workshops. And
LHC 4 years.
Yeah, maybe something like that. Or maybe even further back. I've forgotten. Yeah, we studied, you know, bidding things with numbers of jets and doing flavor tagging and that sort of thing.
Okay, well, I'm hoping to be able to use new tools to be able to... this is actually one of the great periods of time for Monte Carlo generators. So Tanya Glassberg and his clever Stefan Hoch have been able to get a tree-level matrix element generator that can be plugged into Sherpa that actually uses recursive relations for generating the high multiplicity of final states. And so they were able to actually compute LHC PP going up to 8 jets doing the full matrix element calculation on using one computer with 8 running for about several weeks. And so it's now possible to actually compute very large multiplicity final states in a very computationally effective manner. And then, you know, we're hoping to beat out the background using the high multiplicity final states and also jet substructure if necessary, in the same way that David Kaplan used it to search for boosted tops. And so the hope is that we can, by both having understanding how well we can do with these large multiplicity final states with new tools, and also with jet substructure, maybe being able to search for very light R parity violating gluinos. Anyways, just to briefly conclude, we're probing the high energy frontier, and we don't know what to look for. And models are just motivations, and we shouldn't be constrained by the parameters of the models. We need to be thinking about, what are the larger class of models that can fall into, fall in the same categories as a given model, because the worst strategy is not to discover a visible signal. Okay. Thank you.
So just one comment. I've always been worried about these compressed scenarios from the point of view of fine-tuning Higgs.
Absolutely.
Scenario. You can't have a heavy gluino if you're going to avoid fine-tuning, right?
Absolutely.
And so, it's a real concern, I think, for that reason.
I think it's very much, especially if you have the gluino lighter than the squarks, and everything gets brought straight down to the gluino.
Yeah.
And if the gluino, you decay basically straight down into LSP rather than going through sleptons. So a lot of the search strategies with LHC are, go straight out the window with that type of spectroscopy.
Yeah.
And so.
Can I just ask you to explain? You made kind of went by fast, and I don't think I really got your point about the efficiencies being geometrical, and so you're being able to compute the efficiencies. Can you give me, maybe you can explain it, you're getting a little slower, maybe explain what do you mean, what's an example of an efficiency that you would not be able to do this for?
The rate a jet takes a photon, if you needed that. Or, for instance, if you need to lose a lepton or even tag them, finding isolated leptons in a complicated environment. So if we were using a lepton in a four-jet environment, the rate that those are isolated, I think, is not particularly well modeled by PGS. That's what we think, what we found.
The issue is purely, I mean, if I'm just trying to understand, if your ultimate goal would be to get the experimentalist to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I hear you say, well, PGS doesn't do it, I say, well, big deal. They don't use PGS. They'll just do
well, but then, so we get these measurements in cross-sections times efficiencies times acceptances, and then the question is, how do we use those after the experiment is gone? And if it really requires having a perfect detector simulator to take some other theory and...
So the issue is, this is not useful if to calculate the efficiency for your signal... You need to have the detailed simulation of the...
It becomes less useful. It
becomes less useful, yeah. Because, I mean, for the background, they can always do it. That doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but it's just the efficiency. You have to be able to compute the efficiency in a signal. A theorist, to make it optimally useful, a theorist should be able to calculate the efficiency of the signal and get close to the right answer.
Any idea why PGS is 30% off? I'm a little surprised if that is.
We tried lots of different things. I mean, some amount of 10% of that, maybe K factors, 15%, maybe K factors.
In signal?
Yeah, background K factors.
Background K factors.
So K factors in TT bar. Right. We found that, it could be different prescriptions in alpha S as well. Exactly. I mean, how well do we trust these calculations?
One thing,
being
I know
leading
that,
order.
For muons, the acceptance is more CDF-like than D0-like, and
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of better muon acceptance than maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Electrons, I'd be a little surprised if it wasn't
close.
Okay. If you could separate it into those, that'd be interesting.
Okay.
We can... It'd be nice if D0 provided a muon efficiency versus AFI. I could
mm-hmm.
easily incorporate that in PGS as an option.
Yeah. I mean, we felt... You know, at some level, do we trust the... I mean, how well are we computing these cross-sections? The thing that we felt best about is that we were able to compare bin by bin in missing energy, and that it was the same factor in each bin. And so it seemed like it was independent of missing energy. And in the cases that they provided HT plots, it was the same independent of HT. So we didn't feel bad about rescaling it by some K-factor.
Yeah, I'm not surprised if factors like that could crop up.
Yeah, we noticed
PGS
it was
data. Just there to
the,
give
the thing,
you an idea of
exactly.
It was for the
background alone, and we hit the Z going into neutrinos dead on, which made it feel like it was lepton. It was really both TT bar and W plus jets were off by similar factors, although not identical. But we felt. Along with missing energy independence, we were. And again, these are just expected sensitivities. This should be done with data and build detector simulators as opposed to what we have access to.
PGS is faster.
It's true. And we were dead on for all the signal points.
Were you using KT jets? Or
we were using KT jets, yes.
Faster if you don't do that.
I have this mass parameter, green or green on that, and then simply we can just take a squark in between, right? You assume squark heavy.
I assume squark heavy. That was just for making these exclusion plots.
Mm.
It's just as easy, you know, to take, you know, these... our expected signal limits and then do it for squirts or do it for squirts and gluing those and make, you know, exclusion plots until your heart's content. And I think that would be potentially very interesting. But, we got tired of running. I couldn't make Mary Angela and Mifong run any more signal points after.
Dumb question. If I had a 400 to 500 GeV Gluino, how does the pair production cross section compare to fermionic quark pair production, like T prime? Like
so, I can tell you that I think at 450 GeV, you produce 5 Gluinos. So we were actually very surprised we were able to get up to 450 GeV for these exclusion plots, and it was because that's
the cross section is
just
about
big. With 4 inverse femto barns, you got like 5 events, which is enough to set.
I guess I'm asking how many. What's the fact of the ratio of the cross section for Gluino pair production to, let's say, T prime bar?
I think it's just the ratio of some cast. It's enhanced.
It's enhanced by the octet.
Yeah, I think it'd probably like be 1/3 squared or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. We have this excess. Now there's a rumor that these are doesn't see the high HT events we see. That D0 doesn't see the high HT events that we're seeing. This is just a rumor at this point. I haven't seen anything. But we certainly see these events with 800 something GeV HT.
Mm-hmm.
They don't reconstruct the top.
And what else is in them?
Like 180 JeV leptons, 100 JeV missing ET, 200 JeV B jets and stuff. They're really wild events.
Wow.
Don't know what it is. Top can is a tail. You know, both tops are boosted. But
Any other questions or comments? All right, let's thank Jerry for this.